You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my bedroom in Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Weavy with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies, David Goss. What's up? Another day, another podcast, boys. Everybody healthy? That's good. Hope everybody out there listening is healthy and somewhat sane. Hold strong, everybody. Do what you got to do. How you boys feeling? Everything good? Charlie, don't drink too much, man. We don't want to have to, you know, pause this and if you have to go somewhere, a name, that could be sketchy.
I should be good.
Okay.
This is my, like, I think fourth cup of coffee, tea in the past 3 hours. So we'll see.
How do you feel? You're not going to be good then.
Yeah.
I just went to the restroom. I should be good.
Because we're recording from home, I've heard that Charlie just goes straight catheter for the show.
Yeah, that's
we drop that camera
been there,
down.
Been there, done that.
The astronaut had to wear the diapers because she was driving across country. Remember that story from a few years back?
Oh my God! So we've hit
remember
catheters.
When stories like that would be weird.
We've hit diapers, it's just like normal. And that's my cue to jump in here. We're gonna have Stephen Betisher joining us in just a second to talk about the first ever El Tráfico, what he's up to these days. Iran, all number of things. Of course, on Monday night on FS1, you can watch the first ever El Tráfico, aka the Zlatan game. It's in its entirety. And then on Tuesday at 4 p.m. on MLS channels, Benny Failhaber, Chris Pontius, Kalen Carr, our own David Goss will take you through that as well and provide running commentary. So check MLSsoccer.com for all those listings. We'll talk to Stephen in a second, but bigger than that, more important than that, today is National Doctors Day in the U.S. Our thoughts go out to every single doctor, medical worker, person laundering uniforms, making masks, doing whatever it is that everyone is doing to help people stay safe, to stay healthy, to help them recover. All your efforts are greatly appreciated here at Extra Time from me in particular. And we're going to talk to Robbie Russell here in just a second, who's a former MLS player who is now an emergency room intern in Virginia. He's going to kind of take us through what's happening in his life, how he's dealing with this, whatever advice he might have for you. Before we get there, I just want to throw it out to the group here. Anything that you want to say, feel you need to say, as MLS kind of unites right now and gets behind the people who are really helping us get through this pandemic and this crisis?
For me, it's just do your part. Stay home. Stay home. That's all you can do. And it's really simple. Distance yourself by staying home. If you stay home, nothing can happen. Nothing will spread. And we're doing everyone else right. Because this isn't about yourself. This is about everyone else. You're being a good human being. That's what it is you're helping others. And I just can't stress that enough. Is just be home, stay at home, and do your part.
And look to Seattle. Like Seattle, the transmission rate for this disease was somewhere around, I think, an R3 a couple weeks ago, and they have it down to 1.4. So they've cut it in half just by being responsible. Charlie's absolutely right. Stay home, and if you do have to go out, stay far apart, wash your hands, sneeze into your elbow. You're doing it for yourself, but you're doing it for other people too. The thing that hit me hardest of all of this was the other day I read an article. I think it was 51 or 52 Italian doctors have died because they are out there treating the sickest of the sick, putting themselves at risk to save people. And it just broke my heart because they're all heroes, every single one of them. And the last thing I want to do, and I think the last thing any of you should want to do, is put someone else at risk, especially the people who are out there on the front lines fighting to keep civilization together at this point.
Yeah, my cousin is an attending at New York Presbyterian. So he's an attending for infectious diseases. So he's well aware of what we need to do to combat this serious virus. And it literally is stay at home and wash your hands.
do what you got to do. Fortunately, on our end, we feel like we're coming out of it. My wife's feeling much better. I've been good, but we've been inside for a long time. It's boring. It can be tough, but it is what you got to do to save those around you from having an emergency that they don't want to deal with. Let's talk now to Robbie Russell. He's an emergency medicine intern at the Virginia Health System. You also know him from a number of years in Major League Soccer with RSL in DC. He won a championship, had a big PK there, played in Scandinavia for a long time, and then shifted his career path. It's an AT&T call to the field. Robbie, welcome to Extra Time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, so just catch people up if they didn't know, if they're not paying close attention to your education after your career and where you're going and what you're doing now. What's up in the life of Robbie Russell?
Well, I made a very large change in terms of my career goals. After I was done playing, I decided to go back to medical school. Graduated from medical school, and now I'm an acting physician here in Charlottesville, which has been quite the transition. And you know, I picked emergency medicine as my field. So that's been kind of exciting. This is my first year, and it's like you start off as like an MD that's in training, so to speak, which is what an intern is. And you know, it's been a very interesting wild ride, for this first year.
I can only imagine. National Doctors Day today. We've already done our spiel here, but I just want to say it again, Robbie, to you. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Thank you to everyone around and with you, whether it be doctors, nurses, you know, the people, janitors, whatever it is, anybody that's in that hospital helping people. We just want to say from us and from our listeners, thank you so much. Tell us about what you're doing. Tell us about what it's like right now and how you're experiencing this COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, I mean, for us as residents, we kind of come in and we're training under our attendings, who are like the big docs. It's definitely going to be a part of our experience in terms of our first year as physicians. We will be the physician generation that kind of experienced COVID and that sort of thing. And so for it, it kind of affects our training in ways where, you know, things wouldn't necessarily, everyone's adjusting, you know, and it's just a constant adjustment. But it helps coming from my background as an athlete. You know, you're used to kind of adjusting to things, and you don't know what any day is going to bring. And so it helped having those kind of strengths and having those kind of resources in your back pocket, because keeps you on your toes. But you know, I'm here training now, and I'm trying to get as much experience, trying to learn as much as I can, and you know, just trying to help people. That's why I came into medicine after playing, and you know, I'm getting to do that, and so that's what's most important.
We've talked a lot about what's going on, of course, and it's at the front of everyone's mind. It's affecting everyone's life. Can you talk a little maybe for people about, you know, some advice or things that people should focus on? And we've talked about washing your hands simply, but maybe from someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
I think the biggest thing is that, you know, of course, I'm not going to give any kind of advice, medical advice, you know, but I think paying attention to, you know, the reports out of the CDC and paying attention to our, you know, established evidence-based kind of recommendations. You know, that's the biggest thing. And they may change pretty consistently. So you have to kind of stay on top of things. The CDC website's a great resource. But of course, you know, it's one of those things where it's very regional based. And so you have to kind of do a little bit of research and figure out what your region is recommending and doing your best to kind of follow through with those.
We know what's happening here in our own region in New York City. And there are some scary times here, some real anxious times. In Charlottesville, in Virginia, how are you experiencing it? What are you doing in the emergency room? What are the duties that you have right now?
I mean, personally right now, you know, the way your intern year works is that you spend a lot of time kind of rotating through other services. And so, you know, right now I'm rotating through a different service in the ED, but, you know, of course, there's always backup calls. And for me personally, you know, I'm quarantined, not quarantine is the right word, but I'm staying away from my family. They live up in Northern Virginia. And so I haven't seen them in like a month and a half, just because I'm trying to kind of do my part to make sure I'm not, you know, a source of spreading the infection. And so, it's difficult, you know, it's part of the experience we're going to have as like interns and as residents. But you know, you have to do what you have to do.
As someone who's in the medical professional field, all of us feel helpless and we want to say thank you and we want to help any way we can. Is there any advice you'd have for people of messages to send or things that they can do to try and ease the burden a little bit on people who are, you know, fighting this on the front line?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is kind of reaching out to different, you know, charities and different, you know, activities that are doing things to, you know, provide resources to our medical healthcare system. And every, like I said, everything is regional and it's kind of in your area, it might be different than someone else's area, but kind of staying involved, doing what you can to kind of follow the guidelines. And then, you know, if there's any kind of like ways you can volunteer or help, you know, trying to figure that out. But that's going to be entirely like personal and individual based, and doing your best to kind of, you know, get through this very strange time we live in now.
This is a personal question, Robbie, and feel free to sort of brush me off if you feel you need to. But you mentioned being away from your family in this uncertain situation where you're going to work every day. And we know what the situations in many hospitals are. Is there any, what are the emotions that you're feeling? Is there any fear? Is there apprehension? How are you dealing with this personally?
I mean, personally, there's a lot of unknowns. You know, you don't know what it's going to look like in a month, what it's going to look like in 2 months, what it's going to look like in 3 months. How long is this going to last? And I mean, that everyone is kind of dealing with that. Everyone's struggling with that. And, you know, for me personally, just because I'm in healthcare, it doesn't mean I necessarily have a crystal ball to be able to predict things, that sort of thing. And so you just kind of rely on, you know, the information that you have, and you like to kind of use things that are evidence-based, and, you know, the scientific method is there for a reason, you know, and so following it along, like, you know, it gives us as much information as it can, but it's a slow process. And so I think so much of that anxiety comes from that unknown and not knowing how long this will last, how long. But I think the biggest thing I've done is just trying to take it one day at a time, you know, and you show up and do what you're supposed to do that day. And then, like, if it changes, you adjust. And if it continues to go on, then you do your best to kind of roll with it. It doesn't always feel great. You know, I miss my kids, I miss my wife, but, you know, I would always hate to kind of put them at risk just because, you know, the short term, you know, in the end, I'm thinking this is going to be a blip, you know, like 6 months, a year from now, I'm just being like, listen, we got through this. But I wouldn't want to like have it where something I did kind of made it, a much bigger thing for us, you know? That's all I can do personally, you know?
So I just want to say before we let you go and get back to work again, thank you, Robbie, for everything that you're doing. We remember all the moments on the field. I'm like replaying the 2009 penalty kick shootout right now. Yeah, you know, Javi Moe and Kyle and all that. It's amazing stuff. More pressure, stepping up in front of that PK or doing what you do now?
I'm going to say doing what I do now, but that was a good day too.
But he had to worry about Kyle Beckerman getting mad on the other one, so probably close.
Balance it out.
Robbie Russell, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for what you're doing and everybody around you. Please pass our well wishes on to them as well. An emergency medicine intern at the University of Virginia Health System. Best of luck to you, Robbie. As I said, everybody around you, your family, the MLS community is thinking about you, man. Big thanks to Robbie Russell for joining us here and doing what he's doing every day. It's heartbreaking, as Doyle said, to hear what's happening to medical professionals, and Robbie's having to separate himself from his family right now as he does the work that must be done. Anything you want to say to doctors, do it. If it's in your personal life, if it's just a social media post, feel free to use the hashtag MLSUnite. We're all behind them. We're all hoping for the best, and we're all doing what we got to do in these strange times. So let's jump ahead and talk soccer here. Jameson Menzel via email said he's a relative newcomer to soccer and MLS, but the game that sold me on the league was the first El Tráfico in 2018. Though I was rooting for LAFC, I was so intrigued by Zlatan's cocky persona, understatement there, and how he became a villain of sorts in my mind, which kept me watching the league. Do you think that having a villain is important in being a soccer fan? I'll go ahead and answer that one, Jameson. Yeah, it's real important to have those sort of characters. Even Jozy Altidore was saying last year, we need more of them. And if so, is there a specific player any of you love to hate? We'll get to that in the All Load the 11 in the mailbag. But I just want to kind of jump this off before we talk to Steven Betisher about that El Tráfico, about LAFC, about Zlatan, and just kind of open the floor and ask you guys how you experienced that game. Because we have some streams coming up on Monday night, FS1, 8 p.m. Eastern, I believe, and then 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday on YouTube, Facebook, and MLS channels. David Goss, Kalen Carr, Chris Pontius, Benny Failhaber, as I said, commentating throughout that match. So, Charlie, I'll start with you, man. Where were you? How did you experience this? I can remember exactly where I was and everything that I did.
Same. I was in New York City with you guys.
Oh, I forgot about you. Yeah. No, I forgot you were there.
And I remember just watching, being thinking to myself, LA Galaxy are horrible. They're not a good team. and how good Carlos Vela is for the league, for LAFC. And you're watching the game, and at the same time you're thinking, maybe they might not play Zlatan in this match because it's 3-0 and probably doesn't make sense if he just got off the plane the night before. They put him in at 3-1, gives him an opportunity, and boy, did he show out. I remember just jumping on the couch and just thinking about how much of an attraction Zlatan Ibrahimovic is for the league, but also for just sports fans in general in this country. So that's why I was pumped about Zlatan, about El Tráfico, because like that, the writer just told us, he was a converted fan because of that game, because of Zlatan. And that's what we want. We want to see this game grow in America. So a player like Zlatan Ibrahimovic and the performances he had, that's only going to convert those sports enthusiasts to be fans of the game.
You never forget when you fall in love, right? And I fell. I fell for Zlatan in that moment. He was my guy. But I just remember, like people saying before that, he's going to be a flop, that this is a retirement league move, that this isn't going to work out. And in some ways, you know, you could be a doubter and a hater and have actual reason behind you, because his knee was ravaged. He had kind of been hidden away in the Manchester United training room for the better part of a year before he got here. And for him to do that, and he said afterwards, I could barely run. I didn't have any energy. I shot because I didn't want to actually try to go on goal. I mean, it was just crazy. It was crazy. It's a shot heard around the world. You know, a little different historical perspective, Doyle. But to me, that was something that it penetrated every single place soccer goes. You mm-hmm. saw that.
It's an iconic moment, not just for MLS, but for Zlatan. And Zlatan is, you know, one of the five best players of the past 20 years, probably.
Was Zlatan, or?
Sorry. Verone, Lucho Gonzalez. We're just right.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. He delivered. It was great because he had been Zlatan about the whole thing coming to MLS. You know, he'd taken out the ad in the LA Times the day before, like, you're welcome for being here. And then he scores that goal and then gets the game winner. It was an iconic moment. But Charlie's initial instinct was correct. The Galaxy did stink. They were a terrible team. They did not make the playoffs that year. And they only barely made the playoffs last year. And I think one of the things that was great about it was it set up this storyline for this great LAFC team, who I think we all agree is one of the best we've ever seen in MLS, having to struggle to get past this one-man show LA Galaxy side. Mm-hmm. It was not just a great goal. It was a preview of what was to come.
You want to talk to somebody who was there, who had a pretty good view for that one? That's Steven Betashore. He was part of that expansion team, a starter for 2 years, including last year, that great, great LAFC team. Steven, welcome to Extra Time, another AT&T call to the field.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start before the game, because I've been thinking about the Zlatan moment and all the buildup, but I want to rewind because I want to understand what it was like in LA before this. We know what El Tráfico is now. It's one of the most passionate, dramatic rivalries in this league. But beforehand, what was it? Like, as you tried to wrap your arms around what this could be before the game, take us inside that perspective.
Honestly, before the first game, it really felt like another match. Didn't feel like anything what it was about to be. You know, obviously they were our closest rival, but we haven't played them yet. You know, really didn't see outside noise from fans and other stuff. It was just we're trying to prepare and trying to win another match. Obviously being an expansion club, you know, we played a couple games prior to that. We started off well and we were trying to just carry that momentum. But as far as the hatred and, you know, what it really means between two clubs that dislike each other, we didn't feel that until afterwards. And yeah.
Was Bob trying to play it down? Because Bob's never really seemed like he just went all in on this thing. Always kind of felt like, oh, let's not put too much into this thing.
Yeah, it didn't feel like he was trying to play it down. I honestly just think he was trying to make sure that we prepare properly and get ready, regardless of if it was the Galaxy or, you know, someone like Montreal or someone like far away. It didn't matter their proximity to us or the fact that, you know, it was supposed to be our biggest rival. I think all that got built up after we played them and after we continued to play them and just because of the results. And then the fans really got into it after that. But beforehand, no, I don't think so.
So like 3,000 fans showing up in camo because they were going to take the stadium like 5 hours before the game.
Yeah.
Did that not affect you guys at all? Did you go out to the field early to see the fans? Like, do you remember that?
Well, we don't see them 5 hours before, but we definitely saw them when we went out for warmups. I couldn't believe it. That sight, when you're walking out, I think it's the south end when you come through the tunnel, and you see on the opposite corner, far left corner, the amount of LAFC fans. It was unbelievable. And like the flags are waving and man, they're chanting the entire time. And, you know, for that first game, for the first 60 minutes, that's all you heard. You know, you just heard our fans in their stadium, which is unheard of. And it was pretty amazing to set up the rivalry like that.
Did you hear when Zlatan started to warm up? Like, you're playing, you're focused, but did you hear that? Because I remember the chanting from the home fans. I remember the moment he like rose from the bench and everyone kind of said, oh my God, it's happening. He's coming.
Yeah. I typically don't hear the fans when I'm playing. It's kind of just like white noise, kind of a little bit of like tunnel vision. And strangely, obviously, the two times that I heard the fans were one when they scored the first goal, and then it was when Zlatan was warming up. And, you know, you're like, why are these fans cheering right now? Nothing's happening. And then, you know, it goes like up on the Jumbotron. And if I went out to throw the ball or something, I kind of take a look. And, you know, sure enough, he's warming up. I'm like, okay, wow, these guys are really excited for Zlatan.
So, spoiler alert, he comes in the game, scores once or twice. Sorry to take you there, but you have the view of the goal, right? You're kind of chasing behind. One, do you still think it was a foul? Because that's your immediate reaction, is 100%. You think Ola fouled.
100%. 100%.
And what did you make of the shot? Like, you saw that twist, that bend, probably better than anyone in real life. Did you think it was going in?
So, unfortunately, I had the best view in the house. It was like one of the places I didn't want to be, but it was a perfect view. Just, he struck it so well. It's just so pure the way he hit it. But before that, it's a foul. It's 100% a foul. Tyler sends the ball to Stairs. Stairs heads it out. And naturally, when your center back goes up, you know, as outside backs, first of all, you get up and then you got to cover. So we're going to cover and Dejan Jakovic just gets cleaned out by Kamara. And I'm like, okay, this guy's not looking at the ball once. He's just like looking at Jakovic and just crushes him. I'm like, okay, it's a foul. And I kind of put my hands up like, hey. And I don't know if the ref puts his whistle in his mouth and is like, ready to blow it, but then he sees Zlatan like winding up. He's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't blow it right now because this could be amazing. And sure enough, it was amazing for them, terrible for us. But
yeah, boy, that's a long memory for you there. You're still rivalry here at all, right? You're still remembering that little moment. You knew he was gonna shoot though, right? Are you like yelling at Tyler, like, hey, get back on your line? Because as I rewatched this thing and when I watched it the first time, I remember the moment that ball like hits the ground and it bounces up, and anybody who knows this sport is thinking, that's a really good bounce. That's a really kind bounce. And then you start to see Zlatan move his feet a certain way, and it's like, oh, is he going to do this?
Yeah, you could tell he was preparing his feet just to strike it perfectly. And at that point, there's not much Tyler can do, you know? When that happens, you're always kind of playing off your line. But when it bounces perfectly like that, And then when it's the type of player, you know, like the David Villas or the Zlatans, they are able to to hit it perfectly. And sure enough,
he was getting laggy and stuff. His internet definitely was struggling. Yeah.
I got kicked off. Did you guys lose me on that?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you guys could still hear me, so I was just talking.
Yeah, your connection was
cable bill.
It started to go out.
Was it the whole time or just at the end?
No,
just at the very end. You were like really good until the very end. It was weird.
Okay, I'm gonna text my wife real quick to turn off any Wi-Fi.
I was gonna say, what's the
lock here at our house down.
All of our screen rules have gone straight out the window. So
yeah,
he got an hour
Mickey Mouse Club real quick.
Yeah, he previously got an hour a week, and now it's like 2 hours a day, easy. All right, I'll just re-ask the question then. Okay, just let me know when you guys are off. Okay.
Yeah, I'm good. If you guys can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
I'm going to ask the question in just a little bit of a different framing, Stephen.
We're going to fix it.
Yeah, I'm going to fix it.
Yeah, what do you really want to hear?
Yeah, exactly. All right, here we go. So, Stephen, like most people who follow this league, I remember where I was, how I felt when that happened, what I thought when the ball bounced and Zlatan's moving his feet and he's setting himself up and you're like, oh God, he's going to do this. And then when the ball hit the back of the net, I'm pretty sure I ran in circles, screamed expletives in front of my bosses and jumped on a couch. What was the thought that went through your head when he struck it and it hit the back of the net?
When the ball bounced like that, I kind of knew he was going to strike it. I was like, oh no. And at that point, you're not thinking that Tyler's in his goal because he just, you know, cleared the ball to their center back. So I was like, man, if he shoots this, this is probably going to go in. Our luck, they just scored. Momentum was on their side. He just came on the field. I'm like, yeah, this is how it's going to happen. A 40-yard banger. And sure enough, when he hit it, it was just – perfect strike. Yeah, it was devastating, and I was screaming expletives in my own mind as well.
Did you have a feeling that was it, that they were going to find a way, or was there a sense of foreboding, or was it just kind of like, all right, tie game, we'll find our way back, we had the momentum, or was it, dear God, everybody just tackles Zlatan en masse so he doesn't do this again?
You definitely felt the momentum just completely swing. The first one, they had a little bit of momentum, and then that happened. You're just like, yeah, this is not good. Just let's try to gather our thoughts and our, you know, our composure. And, but unfortunately we didn't, and he struck again in the 94th minute, I think. That was not fun.
How much was the game talked about afterwards and like over the last 2 years at LAFC? How much are those moments brought up?
As miserable as it is for anyone affiliated with LAFC, whether you're a player, fan, coaching staff, it was that monumental to the league, to neutral fans, to their fans. It was an incredible first game. If you want to talk about rivalries that are years long. Well, this was the first game. Are you kidding me? Like, what more can a neutral fan ask for? And, you know, it was terrible, you know, and especially we have to relive that moment. But, you know, I see on these random advertisings, Zlatan hitting a 40-yard shot, and I'm like, shoot, there I am, like, going like this, trying to run back, like, no, that's a foul. No, get on your line. And, yeah, it's one of those you have to live, and you know it's not going away anytime soon.
Why was it so difficult for you guys to get over this hump with the Galaxy? Like, what was it about them? Was it just Zlatan? Was it sort of the aura that game created? Was it inside your own heads? What was the difficulty?
You know, if just that first year alone in 2018, if you look at the three games combined, I think we dominated for two-thirds of each game. completely dominated. And then just we made silly mistakes or just uncharacteristic mistakes. And then momentum completely changed. And they only needed 20, 25 minutes to punish us. And meanwhile, we were just dominating for 65, 70 minutes of every single game. So I don't think it was necessarily something that was, sitting over our heads like, oh, man, it's the Galaxy. Why can't we beat them? It was just mistakes, and they really punished us. And I don't think we necessarily punished them as much for being so dominant in those earlier minutes.
I'm curious because you mentioned the way those games play out. It reminds me of the Goonies and the things you guys would do to other teams. But yeah. You're from San Jose. You played in the Cali Clasicos. You played in some wild ones. How do you compare and contrast these two rivalries and, you know, what it feels like as a player, but also what it looks like from a California native?
Feel free to throw in the Canadian Classique as well. We're big Montreal-Toronto stands too.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to be part of the good end of some of these Clasicos and unfortunately the bad end. Yeah, just those earlier days at Stanford Stadium playing against the Galaxy and, being a man down, being down a goal or two goals and then coming back and winning, like crazy stuff. And it was probably, you know, what goes around comes around. And they ended up beating us when I was with LAFC, even though we were up 3-0. So I've had some crazy moments and the fans, you know, I always just kind of reflect to the fans when something like that happens. I remember at Stanford Stadium when we scored, Al Gordon scored the goal when we were down a man and down a goal, and we came back and won when Marvin Chavez kind of shook up De La Garza. And when that goal happened, I didn't run to everyone when they were celebrating. I just remember turning to the right and just looking at the fans, and I'll never forget that moment. There's some plays that just will always get stuck in your mind, and the goal was amazing, but I just remember looking up at the fans and people were just going absolutely bonkers, and it was awesome. And you know, those feelings that you have, as great as they are, they're, you know, the other end of the spectrum when you get scored on, when you're up 3-0 and you get scored on 1, 2, 3, and then the 4th and 94th minute, you're just devastated and you're just kind of like, wow, did this really happen? So that's the beautiful game. You know, you take the highs and the lows. And you know, as a San Jose native, there's not much more than that you want than to beat the Galaxy. There's some great, great moments. Also Toronto, Montreal. Those are great rivalries as well.
I still think back to that Toronto Montreal one at Stade Olympique, I think it was, when the lines were off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that was incredible stuff. So we're going to do something in
the
mailbag.
We
got to
do
here.
Beta's conspiracy corners. The Zlatan goal, kidding. The lines in Montreal. Yeah. He's got some good ammo.
That playoff series with Montreal and Toronto, that might have been the greatest playoff series, I think, in MLS history. That was one of the – I mean, I think between two legs, first of all, the highest attendance in MLS history, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, they packed Olympique, so that would put it close. 65,000,
I think. 65,000,
Toronto had 30,000. Yeah. And then the way it shaped up, you know, they were up, I think, 3-0. We came back 3-2 at their place. And we're coming back like we won, because that's a big victory to score two away goals. And then come home, and then the rain, and then, you know, the fans lighting all the smoke bombs. And it just felt like one of the best atmospheres I've been a part of.
You've played for some really good teams. We're doing our Mount Rushmore right now, as well as the greatest MLS team of all time, trying to put together a bracket. A couple of your squads will be on there, but we're also in the mailbag going to put together our all-loathed MLS 11, the guys that you love to play with but hate when they're on the other team. And come on, Steven Linhart's got to be there. But I want your guy, Steven, the guy for you on a different team, anywhere in the league that you were just like, this guy, I just don't like him. Put a name on that all-loathed 11 for us.
It's funny that you mentioned Linhart. I'm like, he's probably on everybody's list. I love Lenny. What a guy. But I had to train against him as well. Don't forget that.
I heard he was just a savage in training.
Yeah, him and Gordon. And you're like, yeah, we got Wando on our team, but then we're going against Lenny and Gordon, and you're just like, bloody nose, bloody lip. You're like, this is training. We got a game tomorrow. What's going on? But for me, someone that I absolutely hate playing against, oh, gosh. I mean, I guess recently you'd have to throw Zlatan in there just because his antics are kind of similar to Lenny, where he's just a fierce competitor. He's going to give you a couple cheap shots, but he's also very big and strong, and there's not much you can really do to affect him or throw him off his game. And then he scores the goals where just like, yeah, he talks the talk, but then he backs it up. So just, you know, I don't want to waste too much time thinking of every single player that I've played against that I absolutely hate, but I pretty much hate all forwards that I play against.
Gotcha.
Dana, first of all, respect for coming on this show, because Andrew Wiebe is the largest Zlatan fan in the United States.
No worries. Thank you
for taking that time. Also, give us the update on you, because the MLS season started, obviously, on a postponement now. You've been the starting right back for 3 Sporting Shield winners in the last few years. What's your plans? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to be on some really good teams with some, you know, some great leadership, and fortunate to hold up some trophies. I know a lot of guys go throughout their career and either haven't won MLS Cup or even held any trophies in particular. So definitely been fortunate to be on those teams. But right now, you know, free agent, it's pretty crazy with what's going on in the world, not just with MLS. So my first thought is just, you know, everybody be safe, self-isolation, you know, wash your hands, and just don't be careless right now. It's a crazy time. So that's for sure my first thought. And then it goes to, you know, obviously I'm still looking to play. Hopefully I got another good 3-4 years. But you know, there was some talks to go play in Iran. Some people thought I signed over there. It was pretty crazy. They changed my transfer market. I didn't even know you could do that. saying that I'm playing over there. My uncle's calling my dad like, hey, here's Steve's signed in Iran. When's he going? I was like, what? you know, we had some talks with China, but it's crazy. You know, things happen for a reason. You know, I was telling you guys earlier, we had a really good offer with an Iranian team, and the very next day, you hear about the news about Trump killing one of the generals for Iran. And so, obviously, the talk stopped. You know, being a U.S. Born and raised player, going to Iran is not going to happen. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be let in over there or be let in when I'm back. So, couldn't do that. And then the whole China thing with coronavirus, you know, it was just in the beginning of it, like, oh, is it really safe to go there right now, before it had come over here to spread to Italy? So, you know, I think ideally I want to stay in MLS. So hopefully there are some teams that still know that I'm available, a veteran that, you know, has been fortunate to be on some good teams that could help them. So that's where I'm at right now.
Somebody go sign Steven Bedischer. Come on, just look at the resume, people. Look at the resume. Can I ask
He's
you
got
one
the
question?
Golden touch. You've got a green thumb.
Before we let you go.
I don't have any touch. I just got a little lucky, lucky. No,
you were throwing some shade, though. It was like very subtle, though. You're like, hey, look, a lot of players, they don't ever lift. They don't even touch a trophy. Yeah. Don't even get the upper fingertips. They've been all over every trophy in MLS.
You know what was depressing? When you guys put out these stats about like the most winning and all this stuff, and I'm like, man, this is cool. And then I'm like, I still haven't signed. This is kind of depressing. And earlier you guys put like, oh, this person's won this and that and the best percentages. And I'm like, man, I'm on here again, but shoot, I still haven't signed. So thanks, guys. Thanks for
working on it.
We're doing our best. Any GMs, if you're listening to this show, if you're just like, right back could use a little bit of a upgrade, Steven Bedischer available for you. Before we let you go, Steven, I do have to ask you, because I'm a nerd in this way, I want to know how you ended up playing for Iran, because you got called into the U.S. with Klinsmann briefly, and it was like a surprise call-up, and then Carlos Quiroz, he must have convinced you. You went to a World Cup in 2014. How did all that go down?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. When I started playing with the San Jose Earthquakes, I think it was 2011, the Iran national team, Omid Namazi, specifically their assistant coach, who was, I don't think born in the States, but was raised in the States. And he really was pushing to get me in. And the paperwork just took forever, as you can imagine, you know, with Iran or with the U.S. It just takes a long time. And then finally in 2012, I got my first call up to the game in Azteca, where U.S. beat Mexico for the first time ever at their place. And I didn't go in, so I didn't get cap tied. And then comes the January camp, and I got called in again in 2013 for January camp. But unfortunately, I had played the second half of that 2012 Supporter Shield team with the Quakes with a sports hernia. And it was pretty bad because I played, I think, about 4 months with it. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And so my sports hernia tear was pretty bad. I went in for surgery right when the season ended, and unfortunately it wasn't fixed. I went into the camp and I knew I couldn't move. And, you know, I always kind of embraced the speed that I had. And if I don't have my speed, I'm like, yeah, I can't do much. And so I went in for another surgery, this time with the national team doctors, and, you know, they put some mesh in it and fixed it up. And it took me a couple months to get back to playing. So I missed the first 7 games with the Quakes. And then after that, I played every single game the rest of the season. And we really, if you look at our record in 2013, our second half of the season, you know, I think we were on a Supporter Shield pace, but I think Klinsmann sent me a message after the first or second game, and he's like, oh, it's good to see you're back. You look good and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's perfect. He's watching. But then I didn't hear from him or the national team. And there was games that the players were going in and I just wasn't getting called up. And meanwhile, Iran is still like calling every month, like, hey, we still want you. Hey, we still want you. And then I think it was towards the, you know, the end of the summer where they're like, hey, we need to know, you know, you're going to be our guy for the World Cup. We really want you. We need to know. And so I'm like, look, if US isn't calling, then, you know, yeah, I really want to go to World Cup. So the World Cup really drove me to play for Iran. You know, in hindsight, you know, hindsight being 2020, I probably should have stuck it out with the US. I think I could have got a lot more caps in years to come, but you know, when you're young and when you're making decisions, you don't know that, you know, you don't have a crystal ball to look at. So yeah, that's how it kind of came up.
We'll have to get some more stories from you on Iran at a later date. I have so many questions for you. Last one. You going to watch these replays of El Trafico? You going to settle down in front of the TV tonight, FS1 on Monday, and then MLSsoccer.com tomorrow afternoon, Tuesday?
Yeah.
Or are you just going to stay away?
It's tough. I've been seeing a lot of my past teams saying they're posting this game or that game. You know, obviously, LAFC has been putting some of their past games. And then Toronto FC has been doing the same with Montreal. So I've been trying to stay away from them because as great of memories it brings, at the same time, I just want to get back on the pitch. And I know everyone's in self-isolation right now, but for me specifically, not being called in with the team, not having a preseason, it's been a longer self-isolation for me. And so I'm sick of my gym downstairs. I go to it every day and I just want to see a field and start doing what I love. So to answer your question, probably not. I'm sorry. but yeah, I just want to get on the field. That's it.
Understandable, man. Steven Betisher, yeah. Currently without a team. Someone change that. All right. Thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate your time. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Stay safe out there, guys.
All right. Well, we'll do the all Iran version of this podcast at a later date, Dave, or we'll just buy Steven a beer and some hummus and pull it out of him. How's that sound?
Yeah, I'm there for it. I've had really good Iranian food in LA before, so I'm here for it.
Steven, we're on our way. Just know that. All right, let's do our Mount Rushmore here. We knocked out Houston. We knocked out DC. We knocked out Toronto. All 4 players up on the mount, as well as their greatest teams of all time, which we'll throw on a bracket at a later date. I just do want to put out a little addendum to that. It's a 32-team bracket, not just 24. I'm calling it the GMTAT. Actually, I'm throwing that away right now. We'll never call it that again. So that means there are 8 at-large teams. So please send us your candidates for the at-large bids. They can be any double up. So like if you have multiple, let's say, I'm not going to say Toronto, maybe Toronto, but Houston teams, DC teams, throw those in. Diffusion.
Well, they have to be double ups, Weeby. We're giving every other team one.
Yeah, FC Cincinnati gets one. So if they get one.
Unless you just want to give it to Northern Iowa and Ali Farik
Whatever his name is.
We're talking brackets, Weeby. We're talking upsets.
That was mean. That was not right. The Toronto Duck has this to say about our Toronto one. He's never been so offended in his life. The recency bias against Danny Diccio is amazing.
Oh, stop.
You guys better address this. We did address it. We did address it, Toronto Duck. Danny Diccio doesn't belong on the Mount Rushmore for Toronto FC.
No, Danny Diccio is the definitive cult hero. Like, there's a different rubric. Mount Rushmore is for, or the Pantheon. I don't like calling him Mount Rushmore. The Pantheon is for the greats. Danny Diccio meant a lot to that team. A team that stunk, and the fans are right to remember him, but they should also remember that that team did nothing, and the guys who belong in the Pantheon are the guys who have done something in MLS. Bradley, Giovinco, Josie, Jonathan Osorio, arguably Justin Morrow, a few others from recent years.
I disagree with Doyle on the main premise, but I agree with him on the Toronto point, so I'm going to leave it.
All right,
let's disagree with the main premise. That's because you root for the Knicks and you just root for the Jets. You only root for terrible teams.
These are the fan favorite players as well as just the great ones because there are great players on bad teams. This is not rings culture only, okay?
I'm not talking about rings culture. But I'm talking about don't be the worst team in the history of the league.
And Danny Diccio, it's not like Danny Diccio scored 40 goals for a bad team. He was just fun. He had 14 goals in three years.
He wasn't slot on, okay?
Yeah. We've given Danny too much airtime as it is. Speaking of rings culture, it's LAFC and the Galaxy. And one of those has rings and one of them doesn't. We'll start with the team that doesn't. LAFC. You got to start with Carlos Vela, right?
If we're making this bounce, Andrew, it matters.
It does matter, but it's not an MLS Cup, David.
It's better.
Yes. Thank you, Doyle.
This is quite the podcast here. Carlos Vela starts us. Do we need to talk about Carlos Vela here, or do we just get the chisel out and call it good?
Light your candles.
Chisel out and call it good.
There's no debate. He's chiseled.
He's done. What hair are we going with? The man bun? Are we going with the like little ponytail? What kind of?
I'm definitely going with the Canadian tuxedo.
I'm digging the hairstyle right now. Like the Dora the Explorer one? That it can be all slicked all the way back.
Gotcha. So it's the full without slick the
one,
back.
Without one piece, just like constantly getting in the face.
Oh, yeah, but that's, you can brush it out of the way.
Yeah, then you got to do it constantly throughout 90 minutes. Like,
How about Diego Rossi? Is he a chisel it? Just do it?
Yes.
Okay.
Chiseled in.
That's the two top scorers. And that's where it gets a little bit complicated after this. And Doyle, I'll let you start. Who are you putting up there? You can choose from, I want to say, like, Eddie Atuesta could be there. Latif Blessing could be there. Marc-Anthony Kay could. Walker Zimmerman. Despite him getting traded. I mean, you could even throw Jordan Harvey in there, maybe. Who are you going with?
I'm going with Atuesta. I think we can all agree that of all those guys we named, they all have cases, but Atuesta has been one of the best players in the entire league at his position for two straight years. He's been mostly healthy. He's had some big moments. Of course, he did have his worst game in 2 years in that game against Seattle, but that happens with young players. To me, this one's actually kind of easy. Atuesta has to be up there.
Agreed.
I agree as well.
All right, that's four of us. Put it up. This is where it's get hard. Are you going to go Zimmerman for what he meant? Because he has that, like, he has both the leader, the captain, the cult appeal, and also some big moments. Latif Blessing definitely has the cult appeal.
I'm going to cut you off here. I'm going to go first. Not going to say everyone's going to agree, but I'm going to go Marc-Anthony Kay. I think, one, the style he plays with, and when they are at their best, when they are the, you know, Barcelona of MLS or whatever it is they hope to be, it's when he's, you know, getting into gaps between the midfield and the back line, when he's making aggressive passes, when he's changing the game. I also think, and I could be wrong of the way I judge it, he was the first, I think, that came out and it was like, Bob's going to take players who haven't done things before in new positions, in new pressures, and he's going to elevate them to a national team level, basically. I think he was the first guy we really saw that with, and the injury to him probably changed the way 2018 ended for them. So I put him on that list for what he represents, I think, for the future of the club and what he's done, but also purely as a player. I love watching him play. When he's on, I think he's one of the most entertaining central midfielders in the league.
He's also got that fire in his belly where he brought he brought like a personality to them that they didn't always have when he wasn't on the field. But I think you can make that same argument for Latif Blessing. Maybe he hasn't had the national team caps that Marc-Anthony Kay has gotten, but Latif Blessing went from basically like a late game sub for Sporting Kansas City, like a firework off the bench, to one of the most unplayable central midfielders in MLS, just on his pressure, on his ball recovery, on his ability to find the right pass and still score goals as well. I think he's third behind Rossi and Vela in all-time appearances for LAFC. And he is definitely in that same boat of like Bob Bradley sees a diamond in the rough. He brings him in and he pushes him. And now all of a sudden he's Andres Iniesta.
And that happened by mistake.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Let's not forget, it was Lee Wynn's injury that caused Bob Bradley to change Latif Blessing's role, insert him in the midfield, and then he never looked back. He looked like he had played there his whole career. The way he gets forward, he breaks up plays, wins the second balls. His ability to close down that distance between an attacker or the next player who's going to make the play, it's fantastic. So arguing for Latif Blessing or Marc-Anthony Kay, absolutely. But I'm going to go with Walker Zimmerman, what he's meant to that team over the course of 2 years. Yeah, it's tough because you're traded.
They traded him.
After these 2 years, he's got to be on Mount Rushmore because of what he's done for the club in two seasons.
Doyle, I think it's time for you to make a decision that either we all get behind or we all pan. We've got Latif, we've got Walker, and we've got Marc-Anthony.
I think I would agree with Charlie if they hadn't just traded Walker Zimmerman. Like, if he was still on LAFC, then he would be the choice because he was a best 11 center back last year, but he's gone. They didn't think he was worth keeping, so like he's not Mount Rushmore. I do think it's Marc-Anthony Kay, and it's he's been arguably the best player in the league at his position for the last 2 years. He is hurt by the fact that, as David said, his injury in 2018 changed that team for the worse. And then the same thing happened in 2019. Like, if he's healthy against Seattle, I don't think they give up both of those goals or all three of those goals. I think that maybe that's a different game. But even that said, in all due respect to Latif for what he did last year, it's got to be Marc-Anthony Kay. He's the one who, as David said, made you realize Bob Bradley was going to change the way that we think about certain players. And he's certainly held up his end of the bargain.
I'm willing to go along with Doyle's summary judgment here. Charlie, can you get behind this, or you feel like you want to throw a caveat in there?
I'm a little upset. I'm a little upset.
Listen, Charlie, I agree with your whole argument. The one pushback on Latif is he was 19, 20. Like, he wasn't Marc-Anthony Kay got cut from TFC2 and was playing in USL as a winger. And now is, as Doyle said, arguably the best box-to-box midfielder at times in MLS. So that's the only reason that I think I agree with you on Latif. He was a winger, and now all of a sudden he's this incredible short-passing, connecting central midfielder. But he had, you know, the arc to a career that you'd somewhat expect, where Marc-Anthony Kay sort of changed things and is an example of that.
I think you also have to make a decision in these Mount Rushmores where, especially with teams that are brand new in many ways that LAFC is, kind of have to look to the future and say, okay, we're making this right now, but who's most likely to kind of maintain that level and to rise in the eyes of both the fans and the league? And Marc-Anthony Kay probably feels like that player, right?
I'm not being forced into this decision.
Fine.
It's fine. We've already got the majority.
3-1. That's a solid majority. Marc-Anthony Kay goes up.
I'm going to be unhappy as this is being etched out. I'm going to be unhappy sitting here.
Because I'm just going to shout out Eddie Segura, though, by
the way. Yeah, for sure.
Eddie Segura could push his way into this real quick over the next year or two.
He also could be gone in a year as well, and then he's a great player, but where do you stand in history?
Yeah, hey, Diego Rossi could be gone as well, but he scored so many big goals. There you have it. You have Carlos Vela, Charlie Candle gets up there first. Probably make his like double or triple the size of everybody else.
There's just four different images of Carlos Vela. That's the pantheon for LAFC.
Probably. I'll drag my kid out of the picture here if he ever runs in. Anybody who's watching on YouTube just saw Doyle move a tabby cat out of the way. So you have Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi. Why can't I remember the third? I'm already spacing.
Eddie Atuesta.
And then at the very end, Marc-Anthony Kay pushing in. And it's the 2019 team. like greatest team of all time directly into the bracket. Do we even need to discuss it? Probably not. You all experienced it, saw it, heard ad nauseum from us all of last season into this season about 2019 LAFC. They join our other teams in that bracket, which we'll push out on Twitter. Extra time. Let's do the Galaxy. They got some rings. They got five of them. They're still trying to do their race to SACE thing. But I think that the Mount Rushmore for the LA Galaxy makes itself. I don't even think you need to think about this. You start in one place.
That's definitely wrong.
What? Okay, pick it apart then. I'm starting here. Kobe Jones has to be on the Mount Rushmore for the LA Galaxy. Number one in appearances. Agree. He was there for the lean years when they were almost there, not quite. He was there when they started winning MLS Cups. Kobe Jones, he's iconic. He defined the club for long periods. He was an incredible player. Put him up there, start there, and then you got to go straight to Landon Donovan, in my opinion. He is, in so many ways, the Galaxy. I know he had his Quakes years. I know they were very successful there. I know there were some hurt feelings when he went to LA, but he made it pretty clear what he thought he was in his heart, and that was an LA Galaxy member, and he really ushered in those incredible years as well. Then, another no-doubter for me, Robbie Keane, arguably the best player in the league during his time on the most dominant teams. He helped elevate those Donovan and Beckham teams to championship teams, to Supporters Shield winning teams, the best goal scorer in MLS at that time, maybe ever. And here's where the debate comes in. For me, no doubt, Salvadorian legend Mauricio Cienfuegos has to be your fourth. Nope. There from the very beginning, more than 200 games, one of the best number 10s in the league, right there with Marco Echeverri and others, and Valderrama during those early years. He is, in so many ways, LA, whether it be the Salvadorian community there, the way he is integrated into the club. He's now an academy coach. For me, it's those four guys. And Charlie, you're already beefing with me.
I forget. Do they have a statue of him outside the stadium? I don't know. For the life of me, I can't remember
They that. Should, Charlie. They should. Okay?
Put David Beckham's mug right up there. Next to Landon, next to Keane, and next to Kobe Jones, because David Beckham's got to be the fourth guy up there.
Make
what
the
he
case.
Meant to the league, what he meant to the league, how he changed the league, how he changed
this isn't, but
LA
this...
Galaxy, how he changed LA Galaxy. You cannot argue that when he came to LA Galaxy, he elevated the club to a new stratosphere.
You can't, but you... cannot argue that he was as good on the field as like Juninho. Like the team got better when they replaced David Beckham in the lineup with Mauricio Sarfas.
Come on now. Don't be silly.
You
got your Mauricios confused because it's Marcelo Sarvas.
Marcelo Sarvas.
Little respect for our favorite Brazilian midfielder that made his name in Costa Rica, right?
That is absolute disrespect. I cannot believe you said that.
But here's the thing. Charlie, the first couple years were a disaster. Like, I think even Beckham would admit that. Yeah, we are. So overall contributions to the club, Mauricio Cienfuegos, he was the club for like the first 6 years.
Overall contributions, not only on the pitch, off the pitch as well.
You don't think
that? Charlie definitely has argument in that when Beckham came, it changed them into the more modern version of who they were at their peak, right? Obviously, you had the 98-02 teams, and then Beckham is the future, although he played terrible for 3 years or wasn't even there. He's not all of that. So I get what Charlie's saying in terms of the perception of the club. Basically, Zlatan probably doesn't go there if Beckham had never gone there. And I think part of what they've created as modern Galaxy
that's a fact.
Is the Beckham effect. But
keep doing your tea.
At the same time, he's right. He was not the best player on the team. He wasn't the second. He may not have even been the third best player on the team when they won their trophies. And if they lose in 2011, I mean, his time's a failure because of the way it played out. They win that game. He comes back. They win a second one. And it changes our perception from there on.
Can I just make this argument to you, Charlie? That what really turned the page for the Galaxy into the modern era was Bruce Arena. Because making them a serviceable team, and not just serviceable, one of the best in the league by making the right draft picks, the right signings, whether it's a Sarvas or a Juninho or otherwise, that's what transitioned them. Now, this is a weird instance, in my opinion.
But we're not putting managers on Mount Rushmore.
Sure, sure. And from the Bruce Arena observation deck, Bruce Arena is saying, I can't put any words in Bruce Arena's mouth. I'm not willing to do it. Yeah. Rewind. it's weird because you would put, and I probably would too, put David Beckham on the MLS Mount Rushmore of players. Yep. But I don't think I would put him on the LA Galaxy.
You can't do that.
Mount Rushmore.
You can't do that.
No, you can't say
he's Mount Rushmore MLS, but he can't be Mount Rushmore LA.
That's
Galaxy.
Like saying come he's a Hall now. Of Famer, but not a Hall of Famer on his, like you don't retire.
Yeah, he's
his jersey
a Hall of Famer,
of
but
his
we,
own
we
team.
Don't hang his jersey in the rafters. Come on now.
Can I throw out one that you all just shoot down? Does Omar get any argument in this? Three MLS Cups, base of that team.
Yeah. Three MLS Cups, two supporter shields. Omar was arguably a more important piece of that team being what they were than anybody but Landon or Keane.
What about Todd Dunavant? Does he get a shout?
Todd, I mean, no, he was a good left back for a long time, but he wasn't that key.
Kevin Hartman.
I think
Kevin Hartman was awesome, but
he should be in the convo. He should be in the convo, but not there.
Greg Vanney.
No.
I would put Robin Fraser over Greg Vanney.
Yeah, I think Vanney and Fraser are behind Omar because Omar was there longer
and won
his career.
Caleb.
The other one would be Carlos Ruiz.
Yes.
Carlos Ruiz has a claim because the Galaxy, the first 6 years of the league, were kind of like everybody's favorite punching bag because it was like, oh, you guys are great in the regular season, but you're just going to choke in the playoffs again and again and again, especially after 2001 when they lost to the Quakes, which was huge for that rivalry. Well, in 2002 happens and Carlos Ruiz had maybe the best single year in terms of what one player did for the team that anybody had until Joseph Martinez in 2018. He scored, he won the Golden Boot. He scored over half their goals. Mm-hmm. He scored something like 75% of their goals in the playoffs. Then he scored the game-winning goal in MLS Cup itself, the only goal in MLS Cup.
Don't stop. Oh, that one hurts.
I was there too. he was awesome. So he has a claim based on that. That's what makes this discussion so tough with the Galaxy.
So we have Dylan Robert on Twitter who hit us up and said, if Ibra makes it, this show is forever a farce.
I was
Stay
surprised
strong.
You didn't start with him.
Yeah, well, no. Come on, he didn't win.
You don't have to argue to me.
When you bring up Ibra's name in relation to Beckham, I get what
I
you're saying.
I did not bring up Ibra.
Okay. There's some confusion here. This whole Skype thing, it gets difficult to track. We don't know.
We're not
who am
Skype
I attacking?
Anymore,
who am I? Yeah, whatever. Whatever the new product is. But look, he didn't win. And to be on this, you have to win. And that's why Beckham, I think, has a legitimate argument. But Cienfuegos does too. Because I think in more ways, to me at least, Cienfuegos is more the soul of the club than David Beckham would be the quote unquote soul of the club. Does that make sense? Like he's part of the formation.
See where you're trying to go.
Charlie definitely has a pretty big veto stamp with this statue outside the stadium of one of the guys.
Like pass it to the left. Seriously.
Okay.
Seriously.
How many David Beckham?
Are you kidding me?
All right. It's up to you two then. Charlie and I made ourselves clear. Doyle, Goss, who is the fourth?
Wait a minute. Charlie, what one club do you associate David Beckham with?
Everyone.
Not one MLS club.
I think, so who cares? What does it matter?
Wow.
Does
that
matter? Don't dodge
the question. Just answer the question,
Charlie. Just answer the question. What one club do you associate David Beckham with?
I think everyone would agree it's Manchester United.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Please continue,
sure.
Andrew.
Well, I think that case has been made on the MLS Mount Rushmore. I'm overruling you here, Charlie.
That is just a horrible, horrible take.
I think this might be the toughest one we've had.
I think so, too.
If you think about Robbie Keane, tell me what club comes to mind when you associate Robbie Keane. Thank you.
I don't even know what club he played for before the
Is
Galaxy.
Is it LA Galaxy?
It was some. He was with some small feeder club from
North London
island nation.
I don't know. It's some irrelevant club from North London. I can't even remember their name.
He never won a trophy, but he never won
so
a single trophy
good,
before
guys,
he
huh?
came to the Galaxy.
Gosh,
so.
Doesn't it feel so good when you just?
I mean, you know, it's kind of like him and Dimitar Berbatov. Like, who are you going to take? I'm going to take Berbatov personally. Sorry, Robbie. We've got the three. We've decided here via producer Anders that we're going to put this to a fan vote. That way there can be no illusions of wrongdoing.
I know the fans are with me. I know the LA fans are with me.
All right, we'll find out, won't we?
You're with me too, aren't you?
I am not with you. It's close, I am not with you.
Wait, so who is your fourth, Dave?
I would say Cienfuegos as well. For all the arguments everyone has made, it's 49-51. I get Charlie's point. The fact that there's a statue of him outside is really hard to get past. But yeah, I back to my unrings culture. I agree with the concept that Cienfuegos is more the soul of the team. He's more associated with the club. But yeah, it's really tough.
Look, one of them is the owner now of a different MLS team, and the other one is a coach in the academy bringing up the next generation.
So, I don't think he is anymore. Just FYI.
Well, that point
also is irrelevant as well.
Okay, fine. Let's move on because we're going to put this thing.
The guy who said the overall contribution is what matters.
If Cienfuegos could own a team, I guarantee you he's going to be owning a team.
Man, all right. Vegas.
How about this? What I'm saying? How about who's the best? What's the best Galaxy team of all time? You have five MLS Cup winners in this group, but some of them regular season wasn't so great. I think to me, the two that are pretty clear that you have to put head to head, and feel free to disagree, Charlie. I know we're on that tip. Is 2002 first in the West, Supporters Shield winners, MLS Cup winners against the New England Revolution, and then I think it's 2011 Supporters Shield. MLS Cup against the Dynamo, the first of the back-to-backs, both based on regular season and postseason. But Robbie Keane, I don't know, didn't...
I think that 14 team.
You think 14? Second in the West?
I played against
who wasn't on that 14 team?
I played against 2011, and I played against 2014.
Yeah.
So this is your argument for Marcelo Sarvas getting onto Mount Rushmore then?
No, it's not. I think it's between the 02 team and the 2014 team.
Wait, so what was the difference you felt on the field between 2011 and 2014?
I just felt that they were more of a unit. I felt like they played on both sides of the ball together. It wasn't so much, we're just going to counter or we're just going to play it. You know, the four guys are going to stay high and then we're going to have five guys sit back. They felt like they were one unit. They would defend together. They would attack together. They were a little bit more dynamic. And that 14 team, I remember watching how Robbie Keane was able to get from one side of the pitch to the other to unlock defenses. He'd pull, you know, center backs into midfield. He could drop deep and he could be a playmaker. I just remember being in awe of his movement. And that's what separated Robbie Keane from everyone else was how influential he was in the grand scheme of things to be able to bark orders at players and for them to take it in a positive manner and react in the right way, but also scoring goals from distance, chipping keepers, dribbling keepers, making the right pass, the right decision, and just expecting everyone to play at a higher level. He brought the best out of everybody. So that 14 team was special, and obviously they beat us in the MLS Cup final, which left a sour taste in our mouth. But it was a remarkable team, and I think they probably get the nod.
Let me just say, I wrote about this last week because we actually showed the 2011 MLS Cup last week, and we had to do a little bit on what made that team special. So the 2011 team, they had 12 one-goal wins throughout the course of the entire season. They gave up only 28 goals all year long. Only one team since then has given up fewer than 28 goals. That was a 2012 Sporting KC team. They won their first game of the playoffs 1-0. They won their second 2-1, and they won their final game of the playoffs 1-0 in MLS Cup itself. Only two players scored goals for that 2011 team. In the playoffs, it was Landon with three, two of them penalties, one of them the game winner in MLS Cup, and the other one was Mike McGee. Keane didn't even score in the playoffs. The 2014 team had more multi-goal wins during like a 15-game stretch after Landon got cut from the national team than the 2011 team had the entire year, including into the playoffs. They were just a better team. The reason that they didn't win the double is because the first 2 months of the season, Landon and Keane and a few other guys were kind of saving themselves for the World Cup.
They were sipping coffee.
Yeah, they really weren't going after the Shield. But there's like, and like people have their opinions about Jossie Zardes. Jossie Zardes has been a double-digit scorer in MLS 4 years now. He started and scored in that MLS Cup against you guys, Charlie. In the 2011 MLS Cup, they started Adam Christman at center forward. And if you go back and you watch that 2011 MLS Cup, they were all over Houston for almost the entire 90 minutes. If it had been Jossie Zardes instead of Adam Christman, they win that game 3-0. But it wasn't. It wasn't. One guy was a fringe MLS player. The other guy is a guy who's going to end up scoring 100 MLS goals. Mm-hmm. 2014 team was better. Even though they didn't win the double, the 2014 team was absolutely better.
And you're talking about splitting hairs. I mean, they lost by, what, 3 points to the Seattle Sounders?
Yeah.
That Seattle Sounders team was also awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah. That Seattle team in the pre-TAM era, that Seattle team was arguably a top five MLS team of all time. And they're back and forth against the Galaxy at the end of the season and then in the playoffs, those Western Conference finals, like we still might not have had a playoff series played at that level.
I was rooting for Seattle because then we would have got the MLS Cup at Foxborough Gillette Stadium, which would have been amazing. So
no, you wouldn't have. It would have been a Seattle.
Oh, I thought we were going to get it.
No, Seattle won the Shield. So it would have been a Seattle.
Now we know. Now we know that Charlie just twists history for his own nefarious reasons. I'm fine to give it the 2014. It's easy to get caught up in sort of the trophy count and the supporters' shields, but I think you guys are right. As far as a team go, you just run them out on the field on a given day. That is a better team, and they had extenuating circumstances with the World Cup, with the fact that they'd already won the Shield. They didn't need to win that to validate themselves. They just needed to do it at the end of the year. MLS Cups. Dave,
you one argument against it from a pure personnel point of view, and I agree with what Charlie said. I thought the 2014 teams were more cohesive. They had a lot of talent around the field. They did start AJ De La Garza at right back and therefore started Leonardo at center back.
Leonardo.
Who is arguably one of the worst starting center backs in MLS history. While in 2011, AJ started at center back and Sean Franklin started at right back, who I think was an upgrade. Now, 2014, they had Robbie Rogers at left back. After he finally found his feet at that position, he was one of the best attacking fullbacks in the league. So I think there's a million arguments both ways. I thought on the field, watching them play the way they played, I thought they were better in 2014. And everything Charlie said from experiencing it is exactly what I saw. But there is the Leonardo thing that stands out.
All right. So well, that's why we have at-large bids. So Galaxy fans, what's the second best team in the history of your club? Maybe even the third. You might get a couple on there. Let us know. 401-206-0MLS. We've now got five teams Mount Rushmore set. We have five greatest teams of all time in there. We will seed and get the at-large bids at a later date. Dave, you were going to help us pick two more clubs, were you not? You had some sort of randomization device.
I have a randomized list. I was going to do it based off the numbers Charlie wore on different teams he played for, but because he's a selfish and swag individual, he only wore the number 9 and 10, which doesn't really give me that much. So, Doyle, how old's Taquito?
Taquito is 6 years old.
So one of our teams is going to be Atlanta.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
For Charlie, which number do you want to pick, Charlie, 9 or 10?
9.
So one of our teams will be RSL. And Weeby, what number did you wear in baseball or soccer?
I wore 6, so we've already done that one.
Nice. Okay. Then never mind. We'll scratch that one.
General So is 14.
Go 12.
General
go
So 12. Is 14, so we'll go Vancouver. So our teams are Atlanta.
Ooh, that one's gonna be tough.
Atlanta, RSL, and Vancouver.
There you go.
Sabarillo and
we're doing this on the later show.
I know, but I get to talk about Sabarillo.
Charlie wants to make it Beckham again. Charlie wants to make a backup for RSL too.
Hey, RSL had a pretty big place to play in the Beckham legacy.
They did.
They do.
So did Robbie Russell, who I just want to again say big thanks to for joining the show, and Stephen Betisher. Here's a couple of tastes from the mailbag before we get out of here. Colt from Topeka, what's up, man? Kansas TID. He says he's on the treadmill for a morning run, listening to the pod, and Kalen drops the Donovan goal against Algeria as his favorite moment. Colt says it's been his favorite moment too, and it was the only thing running through my head when Kalen said that. All he heard was Ian Dark yelling, "Go, go, USA!" He says he got chills 10 years later. At that moment, Colt was in the Marines on his first deployment in the middle of the Indian Ocean on the USS Pearl Harbor. He was crammed in a tiny room with a 15-inch computer monitor as the TV, watching with 20 other guys. He says the most amazing soccer memory of his life. So an awesome memory from Colt in Topeka. And we'll end here since we kind of teased it with Stephen Badisher. Doug Bradley says he calling for that all-time load 11. He's from Mays, Kansas, too. So we got double Kansas in the mailbag. And I put together sort of a
we're going to have our own version of the Tiger King with Andrew Weeby here.
I know some Tiger King folk from my days in rural Kansas.
I don't doubt it.
Help me out here. Cause I have sort of a 11 nailed down. I don't have a goalkeeper. So think on that right now. If you guys have any all load goalkeepers,
we already talked about it. 2014 Galaxy, Jaime Pineda.
No, really?
He wasted time like an expert.
I'm gonna disagree with that, even though he is up there. He is up there. He did it to us in the MLS Cup final.
Yeah, who would be your number one most loathed goalkeeper then, Charlie? Who you would have liked to play with but hated playing against? Think on that. Because I got Rafa Márquez on my back line. I definitely have Eddie Robinson on my back line. But Mike Pecky should go in there probably. So we'll go Rafa Márquez, Eddie Robinson, and Mike Pecky on the back line. Midfield, you got to have Felipe. You got to have
Ben Olsen.
Ben Olsen, he's in there. Hold on. Nigel De Jong, I think you have to have.
Yeah,
It was too short of a time in MLS, though.
Okay. How about Dima Komolico? He's got to be.
What about Kyle Beckerman's got to be in there, right?
Ozzie Alonso's got to shout. The midfield is packed.
You can't just list six demons. You have to pick the most loathed demon.
Who is it?
I think it's Dima.
Dima wasn't a demon.
Yeah, that's fair. But what formation are you playing, Doyle?
I don't know. I haven't thought it through enough. But you just have to. You can't.
Felipe is up as top two for me.
Felipe and Dima can play in front of the six.
Top two for everyone.
Felipe and Dima play in front of a six. It's more sort of like that old school pressing SKC team. You don't need a number 10. You're creating through all your loathsome actions on the field. And then up top, I have Zlatan, I have Linhart, and I have Stoichkov. So I need one more. We set the defender. We got to decide the midfield. But those are the starting points.
You're playing Lenny on the wing. You're playing Lenny and Cristo on the wing.
They're all just in the middle, just like banging on center backs, just making it a living hell for them. We don't have to play an actual formation here.
God, Doyle's imagination is so strong.
I know. He's like, what, on the wing? What?
Not you have 3-4-2-1. Understand structure in order to subvert it. It's just basic.
All right, 401-206-0MLS. Hit us up with some texts as you sit around your house bored, and you should be at home. We'll just reiterate that one. Social distance, please, everyone. Email us, extratime@mlssoccer.com. We will do more Mount Rushmores on Thursday and check in with you then. For now, we'll see you next time. Have a good week, everybody.